Mike here, LexCoachMike.com. Premium guys, you are awesome. Wow, what an interesting podcast this is. For the first time, we have Coach Ryan Poley, head coach at Boston University. They hired him in 2012 as they were converting from a really strong MCLA program into a D1 program. Here it is, 5 years later, he's Patriot League Coach of the Year. Obviously had a great season in 2017. New England Division I Coach of the Year. Kind of had a feel for where he was coming from to a degree because he spent 6 years at Yale working with Andy Shea. Had a great career there. Before that, he was the head coach at Merrimack, where he was the Division II Coach of the Year. I think you're going to get really, really fascinated by this practice plan. Very interesting versus it's kind of a traditional practice plan with a lot of new ideas. He spends 20 to 25 minutes on throwing and catching, basic fundamentals, ongoing focus on reducing turnovers and clearing. There's a great drill in here on clears where they start with a shot clock exercise. Why didn't I think of that years ago? Moving into parts of the hole. And one other thing that's interesting is he does his position work, including his shooting drills, like an hour and 20 minutes into practice. But I think you'll be fascinated, and the podcast will make you think. Again, very, very humbled by your support. Without further ado, we got to get him back soon, man. Coach Ryan Poley, Boston University.
Hey, Lex Coach Mike here, LexCoachMike.com, broadcasting live from the international headquarters of LexCoachMike.com. I'm absolutely thrilled today. Got a guy I haven't had a chance to interview before, but we've got a lot of emails, and I'm really, really anxious to talk to him. Please welcome Ryan Poley from Boston University. Coach, welcome to LexCoachMike.com.
Thanks, Mike. Really excited to be here and talk to you.
This is where you say really nice things about us and our site, man. Evidently, you didn't get the script, but with that being said, Coach,
I hope I can do a good job here. People, you know, aren't going to hear this podcast and then go, man, I can do what that guy does. He doesn't know anything.
Well, you know what the really cool thing is? That it's impossible to sound worse than me, man. You know, so the absolute worst thing that can happen is you're going to be the second worst guy on this podcast. I mean, it doesn't get any better than that, you know?
Maybe we can tie.
There we go. Coach, for the listeners' edification, just done a great job there. Like that, edification?
Yep.
Just done a great job there at Boston University. What, 5 years now?
Yeah, I've been here five, 4 years with the program. We start a program and they announced it, you know, about 5.5 years ago, and then did about a 6-month search, and then got the job 2012 with a year to recruit, and kind of kicked it off in 2013, and have kind of been plugging away, and just had a great year with our, you know, 17 seniors as part of our inaugural class. So, real excited about what we're doing, and you know, just really happy for the seniors to come and believe in me and the program, and then just have a really great, you know, senior year, and you know, really put me on the map.
Well, I mean, had a nice little run at Merrimack. All our listeners know all about Merrimack. And Coach Shea at Yale, who, you know, our listeners know inside and out, too. Hey, listen, I want to talk to you about practice plans, but I had this dialogue with a couple of the different coaches that have gone through this similar thing. Just a 30-second thumbnail on the challenges from taking a program from MCLA to D1.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if I can do it in 30 seconds. It's just, you know,
I mean,
it's just a lot.
Did you carry over some of those players?
We did. You know, the first decision we had to make, and we kind of had a few blueprints out there with Michigan going a couple years prior to us, and then Marquette doing it, and High Point doing it. We just had to make a decision, you know, how we're going to build this first roster. Were we going to roll over the majority of the club roster and then backfill it with, you know, a small recruiting class, or were we going to do the exact opposite and have a really big inaugural class and then backfill it with our guys on campus, our club guys. So, you know, for just kind of looking at it for BU and kind of where we were in the club, you know, we were a really competitive team, but we weren't a team that was, you know, constantly winning, you know, national championships or competing at that level. We just thought going to the Patriot League, if we kind of went with this club model, that it would be just, you know, tough for us to compete. So what we did was kind of rolled up our sleeves and said, hey, let's go get 30 freshmen to come in, and then we'll take a look at what we have on the club roster, coached a little bit that first year, was at a couple practices, got to know some of the guys, had a tryout, you know, the second year when we were first year varsity, and we ended up keeping six guys, which was really cool because we could still have that bridge between, our varsity program and our club program. And from day one, you know, one of my first speeches, I said, listen, it's not BU varsity, it's not BU club, it's BU lacrosse. So the club guys, throughout the years, we've had over 38 years of club, have been incredible. I mean, they are so excited. They're texting me. They're saying, great job. You know, we do a newsletter every month, and those guys are like, it's so cool to just see how this program's grown. And I remember this. I remember that. I remember playing on this field. I remember playing these teams. And, you know, we're really getting a great response from the club guys coming back. And it's just been really rewarding. And now we'll have this big class graduate. So, you know, we'll have our first varsity alum coming back. So it's going to be really neat to kind of bridge this gap and kind of keep this thing going. So, I had a plan and it's gone pretty to form, and, you know, just couldn't be more happy at BU, and just kind of the support we're getting from, you know, from the president down through athletic administration. It's been incredible.
It kind of reminds me a little bit of the scenario at Richmond, you know. When I was coaching at Auburn, we played Richmond. Man, really, really good team. Not top four in the country, you know, MCLA, or competing with some of those teams out west at that time. Although, you know, Georgia Tech and Florida State and Virginia Tech have done a nice job of competing with those teams here in the last couple of years. But a formidable program. I mean, certainly not a mid-range program, you know, an above-average program. And, I think all those guys have, you know, little dreams and aspirations, you know, of that thing going one. But the other coaches, Michigan and Jumaati, I know they wrestled, you know, with the club guys on the roster, and cutting them or keeping them or trying to maintain some continuity, and then every once in a while they ran into a pretty good player.
Yeah, well, I mean, we had a couple guys. Our goalie was one of the top in the MCLA, and we ended up getting just a stud from Texas as a freshman, and he's been a four-year starter, Patriot League goalie of the year. But our backup goalie from the club, he was legit. I mean, he was a guy that, if we hadn't hit a home run in our first recruiting class with a goalie, he would have been there. And I think he would have given, certainly a really good look, and we could have built a defense around him, and I think we would have been okay with him. He was a great player, and we had a backup faceoff guy that did a nice job for us. Those guys they were older, so they provided leadership. They provided a way about being on campus that was really important. They knew, the ins and outs of the university, and kind of just as far as academics goes, and this is how you matriculate your way through if you want to be a business student. So those guys were invaluable. I mean, they were
incredible. Say? How you matriculate? Is that what you said?
That's what I said.
Coach, there's like 1,500 lacrosse coaches listening to this, man. I mean, you can't.
Yeah, well.
Yeah, don't be going Lars Tiffany on me here, man. Or Andy
Kay,
right?
I didn't go to Brown, guys. Or I didn't go to BU, or I didn't go to Yale. So I'll start using some Merrimack words. So how you get your way through the university, you know, how you figure it out.
Yeah.
So, those guys did a nice job. And, the foundation, that you use that word and you kind of throw it around, but it was built, you know, through those first 4 years, and the seniors had a lot to do with it, but those six club guys also, you know, did a really nice job those couple of years. And it was hard, man. They had probably 30 guys that they were buds with that got cut, you know, that we just couldn't keep from a roster standpoint. And we're a little limited in our fields at BU. We only have two fields, so they couldn't have both. You know, that would have been ideal if we could have had this varsity program and then also had a club program that these guys could still play on, but we just don't have the facilities, and, you know, field space is an issue for us. So, you know, it was, you know, those guys kind of had to deal with that, you know, getting them making the team and their buddies getting cut. But they did an outstanding job. And, you know, I'll ever be thankful to those guys.
Yeah, it's interesting, man, the pedigree coaches that have come out of Merrimack, huh?
Yeah, not bad. Yeah, a couple
not bad.
Of guys, you know, Frank Aloy, you know, he's still – you know, he was my coach, and, still really texted me today, and are we going to the game? And of course we are, man. Like, why wouldn't we go celebrate what Morgan's doing down there? So, Morgan was my roommate, and then Neil Anderson is up at Curry. Or, I'm sorry, Neil Anderson's at Norwich, and then the kid that plays for me at Merrimack, Tim Murphy, is at Curry. So we got a bunch of guys out there, and Brazil played for me, who's Mike's assistant at Merrimack. So it's really cool that, you know, certainly the NE 10 is represented, Merrimack is represented. You know, Shea's a Lemoyne guy, so it's pretty cool that this little conference is you know, producing some, you know, really great collegiate coaches.
Man, well, let's get to it, man. Give me a thumbnail sketch, if you would, on kind of a and remember, man, it's going to be an interesting question, in that obviously fall ball is a lot different than Monday in the spring, which is a lot different than Friday
sure.
in the spring. Can you give me a thumbnail of maybe what your practice skeleton plan looked like at Merrimack compared to what it looks like at BU?
I'll say at Merrimack, not that we were less organized, but it was, you know, part-time and trying to, you know, we'll spend at BU, we'll spend an hour to 90 minutes designing practice. And it just, you're trying to get, you're really building a team, and you're really trying to get to that end goal of, you know, having the best team and each individual, you know, reach his full potential throughout the year. So practice is always done with a precise thought process to that. And at Merrimack, we were a little bit, you know, a little bit by the seat of our pants. You know, I was working till 4 o'clock, and then practice was at 4:30, and then you kind of was thinking about practice on the way there, and kind of had the idea of what I wanted to get accomplished at practice, but it was on an index card. It wasn't on a piece of paper. I didn't have a nice Excel program that I picked from a allotment of drills, and it just, you know, it was kind of, all right, well, we're not very good on 6-on-6, so we need to work on that. So let's start 6-on-6, and we need to do this. And it was more of a ebb and flow with kind of how the season was going. And it was, you know, it worked for us because, you know, we had a lot of success there. But it was more really focused on not problem solving, but fixing what was, you know, our issue that week. And we only had, you know, we were only dealing with about 35 guys. So it was, we didn't have 50, and we didn't always have to think about, okay, well, how do we, all right, it's 20 degrees out, and I need to make sure that player 45 through 50 is constantly moving because he's going to freeze his tail out. So everybody was, you know, participating in practice. So that made it a lot easier. You know, my assistant was part-time, so there wasn't a lot of communication. We didn't have cell phones like we had back there. I mean, we had cell phones, but we weren't texting like we were. So it was more, you know, here's an index card. Let me go make a photocopy of it, and let's try to meet. Let's make sure we're on the same page 5 minutes before practice. So it was a great learning experience for me, but it was a learn on the fly. And it was great because I was coaching offense, I was coaching defense, I was coaching special teams, and it just kind of, I really cut my teeth there, and I learned learned a lot by just making, you know, the mistakes. So, you know, I always tell, you know, people that, you know, that I try to mentor, you know, go take a D2 job, go take a D3 job. I mean, those jobs are, that's where you learn to coach. I mean, and it's, everybody wants to be in the ACC, Ivy, Big Ten, Patriot League, and playing these great teams and looking down the sideline. I'll never forget the first, you know, first time we played Princeton, and I looked down the line, and there's Bill Tierney, and that was like, I feel like I kind of made it. But, and everybody wants that, but I wouldn't have been able to take those steps if I didn't have my stop at Merrimack and be able to try different things on the fly and just, you know, really learn, wow, whoop, that didn't work. And, wow, that was a terrible drill that I just invented. So, you know, a lot of it was, you know, like I said, a little, fly by the seat of my pants and just trying new things out. Now Mike's full time now, so it's a little bit different, and Merrimack made the commitment, and that's probably why they're in the national, it is, well, besides Mike being a great coach and doing great things and being a great program, I'm sure the support level is trying to help Mike get over the hump and get him to that national championship. So, you know, a lot of stuff that we did at Merrimack was full field stuff. We wanted to be a transition team. We wanted to score a lot of goals. So we were very heavy on doing big field pitcher things. And it wasn't until I got to Yale that I really learned, and this was something that I kind of missed as a young coach, was you got to go a little bit smaller. You know, you got to work on individual stuff. You got to do small two-man game. You got to do three-on-threes. And there's a really build-up to, you know, making this product on the field on Saturdays the great thing that you want it to be. So that was something that, as a young coach, I always wanted to scheme, and I always wanted to say, if we do this as a unit, you know, we can outmaneuver a coach. And, you know, that was, we were kind of always working on six-on-six. We're always working our transition game. We were always working our, our ride and our clears where, you know, man, breaking it down over, you know, as I got to Yale and got to BU, it was like, well, we need to kind of figure out this small piece of it that's going to allow us to clear the ball. It's going to allow us, you know, we got to learn how, for our attackmen, how to learn to turn a guy. We got to move our feet when we're riding. We just can't say, all right, let's put 10 guys out there and this is going to work, you know, perfectly. So, you know, at Merrimack, like I said, it was a lot of big picture stuff, and then kind of move to Yale and get with some great coaches and Coach Shea and Coach Neamy, and then just say, wow, okay, this is what I was missing as a coach. So I kind of came in with having a lot of grand ideas and kind of understanding offense and defense, but, you know, really developing the player. And that's, you know, that's why I think Yale's been so, so good over these last, you know, 7 or 8 years is just their player development. And that was something that when I got to BU, it's like, we got to get guys better. And I'm very proud of kind of my senior class. If you look at them as freshmen, and they're a lot better, you know, because they've worked hard at it. And I think we've given them a good plan to be better. That was something that I took from Yale, and it was, you know, what we tried to do at BU, and I think we've done a good job with that.
You know, I think everybody says it or does it, but as I was listening to you, I just started to get all these, like, flashbacks, you know. I think the Ivy coaches, going back to when I interviewed Tambroni when he was at Cornell, I think the Ivy coaches used the phrase parts of the whole more than any other group of coaches, you know, that I've interviewed, whatever it is, 155 hours now, you know. I mean, I think everybody does it, but the and there's so many, you know, specialty coaches now on the coaching staffs you know, four guys, five guys, six guys, you know, where it yep. wasn't that way in the past necessarily. But, yeah, I mean, that parts of the whole is something that phrase is something I hear more, you know, from the Ivy guys. And like I said, I'm not suggesting that everybody doesn't do it that way, because they do. But, yeah, that was a big phrase, and hear it all the time. Yeah, I'll never forget, yeah. Man, the first time I interviewed Shea, he was talking about putting these four square cones out all over the field, right? And it was four cones and three guys, and, you know, you would run to a cone and then roll back and pass across your body, throw it forward, and... So I went out the next day, you know, talking about parts of the whole. I went out the next day, and I put four cones all over the field. And to say it was a cluster is like saying I'm old, you know. I mean, it was right. Awful.
Yeah.
And so I the next day, you know, I called Coach Shea, and I said, man, and we've become such good friends, you know. But I said, man, this is like 7 years ago. I said, I screwed this up, you know. He actually drew it on a napkin. And took a picture of it and sent it to me on the phone.
Yeah.
And I got to go back to that, man. I haven't done that in a while, but it was phenomenal.
You know what's so funny, Mike, is we do that. Like, it's just, I mean, I'll, you know, listen, Coach Caputo is a better coach than I'll ever be, but, you know, he started doing the defense for the first time at Duke. And he calls me and he's like, you know, like, we're struggling with this. And I said, hey, here's just a drill that we do, you know, and I'm drawing on a piece of paper. I'm taking a picture of it and I'm texting it to him. And it's like so cool just in, you know, that's how our business works. And everybody wants, you know, you got guys that you're super competitive with and you kind of find this small group of people that you trust and you want to help and you want to see them succeed. And you're always talking the game, just like you're always talking the game, and you get all these great coaches on, and we love to talk the game. We're on the road, we're talking the game. It's, you know, it's, hey, I'm driving to work. Let me call this guy. Let me, you know, you said Lars said hello, and you know, let me call Lars because I'm on the road and see what he's doing. And it inevitably turns to, you know, how's it going? Well, I'm struggling with this, and have you thought about that? And, you know, 9 out of 10 times you're drawing something on a napkin and sending it to somebody, and you know, and it could be, you might get it, and I've gotten and go, oh my God, that's not going to help me. And then other times you're like, this is, you know, this could be the key to what we're doing, and I can fix what is wrong with my defense or offense by just doing this one drill, and hopefully it's going to be an aha moment. So really cool stuff, Mike.
Yeah, I think I have to go back and look, man. I haven't looked at it in so long. I think I took those pictures of the napkin and put them on my site in the article section under that drill, if I'm
sure.
not mistaken.
Yeah.
It was hysterical, you know. It was hysterical. Yep. Hey, man, let's talk about BU. So what time do you practice, Coach?
We practice. So we do Monday nights. We got some guys that are in some labs. So
yeah.
Our guys try to take their labs from 4 to 6. So we'll go about 6:30 on Monday nights, and then we go right in the afternoon, Tuesday, Thursday, Friday, and then
like 3 o'clock or 4 o'clock or something like that.
No, we go at like 1:30.
Really?
We get a nice 1:30 to 3:30 slot, and then we go 4 o'clock on Wednesdays. We got a nice schedule. In season, we share with the women's lacrosse team, and we just worked it out, and their schedule is, you know, just the opposite of ours, and, you know, at the latest, they're done by 6. So, you know, great working relationship with Coach Robertshaw, and, you know, we just make it work. So, again, we got guys missing. You know, we talked about this on our pre-call, just guys coming, BU's academics first, like so many great institutions and great lacrosse schools. We got guys coming and going, so we, you know, and I think we're going to dive into practice later, but, you know, we got to do man up that this time in practice because my man Hayden Ruiz is going to engineering class, and it's a fun, you know, it's fun the part of coaching. You got to CEO this thing and just make sure that you're not missing, and sometimes we miss it, and you're like, oh, my God, we're man up and we don't have our guy, which is great practice. Well, guess what? This kid might, you know, have broken a stick, and we got to, all right, well, who's the backup? Get in there. Because guess what? Hayden's at engineering class. So, you know, there's always something, and it makes my job. I don't call it a job, man. I call it my love. I call it my passion. I never once in, you know, doing this a long time now, I've gone to work and not been energized and enthusiastic and, you know, can't wait to tackle. There's some tasks that, you know, I like better than others, but, oh man, I can't imagine. You know, I made the, when Andy gave me the opportunity, I kind of left the professional world. I don't know if I could ever go back, to be honest. So just so blessed and happy that this was my career path and that I can do
it. Yeah, I'm trying to balance the two, and I hate my professional world.
Right.
All right, man, the guys come out at 1:30. What happens then, Coach? Just as a general skeleton, let's get through it.
Yeah, so we, over the last 4 years, we're trying to figure out the two areas that have really held us back have been our clearing and our turnovers. So pretty much everything that we have done from practice plan, you know, we got to do 6-on-6, and we got to be prepared, and we, you know, got to shoot the ball well, and all these things, everything that we've done over the last 4 years has really been to try to figure out this issue that we have with turning the ball over, and a lot of times we turn the ball over in the clear, and upping our clearing percentage. So the first thing we'll do is what we call hard catch. We'll stand 10 yards away from each other, and guys are just going to put 25, you know, short sticks. We'll throw as, you know, not as hard as you can, but really good pace, 25 right hand, 25 left hand, and then they'll move back 5 yards, and they'll do that for 5 minutes. You know, we want the first thing that they do is to come out and get 100 touches. So that's important. And it gets a little, we've had to kind of tinker with it because if you do that for, you know, 80 practices, I'm looking at my practice schedule now. Spring, and we'll give it 1 second here. Spring, we had 80s. Into the bottom. We had 82 practices. So if you do that 82 straight times, you know, you gotta, it gets a little monotonous. So, You know, we'll do a hard catch, but make it a bad ball, or we'll do it, you know, go behind your back, or we'll try to change it up. You know, once a week, we'll do something in there. We'll do bad balls. So you're working on, you know, your pass has to be, you know, out of the box. And guys got to catch it and then, you know, bring it to, you know, a nice cradle to where they're going to throw overhand and fundamental, but then they got to put the ball, you know, in a bad spot. So, that's the first thing we do.
I know Burns, he does that a lot with his, poles at Notre Dame.
Does he?
Yeah, they have a drill where they just do bad passes. Yeah.
Yeah, the poles are doing the same thing. They're not quite as, rigid as, you know, having these 100 touches. They're having to catch, and a lot of times they'll start out, first 2 minutes they'll do catch, and then they'll extend. They gotta throw those long passes. So by the end, you know, they're throwing overs. But everybody's getting some touches before. Then we'll stretch. You know, we'll stretch for we do a dynamic stretch for 14 minutes. And then we'll go right into, we do group stick work, which is we separate an offense and defense, and the position coaches get to choose from probably 10 drills that we do, for about 7 or 8 minutes. So again, where we're maximizing the touches, we'll do anything from, you know, box passing, which I think was the drill that you were alluding to, that Andy did, to, you know, we call it three man, where there's three guys and there's two balls and the guys are kind of moving, counterclockwise and throwing the ball and doing a variety of different catches, pull passes, push passes. Then we do five man, where there's five man, you make it a little bit more spread out. And again, we're working on all the passes that we could throw, within our offense, you know, step away, roll. We call it hand exchanges, where we're going from right to left. You have to, you can swim, you can submarine, you can split dodge, you can do roll dodge, you just can't do the same one twice in a row. We call those switches. You know, just everything that we're doing, and we're trying to get as many touches as we can, you know, before we really get into the meat of practice. And then the defense has a bunch of drills that they do stick work wise. Like I said, maybe sometimes, working around the clearing game. They'll do ground ball drills. They'll do some different things. And then we come together as a team and we do a team drill. We got about 7 or 8 team drills that we like, kind of working on those longer passes, getting the ball up and down the field, to get.
So the hard catch is what, about 12 minutes?
Hard catch is five.
It's 5 minutes.
Get out. Yeah. Real quick. Get out there and get the ball on your stick and, you know, get as many touches as you can in that 5 minutes, just so you're, you know, you're sticks out in and you're thinking about.
Yeah, so,
you know,
but
we.
Yeah, I was going to say, then we stretch for 14, then we got the group stick work for 10 or 12?
Group is going to be 7 or 8.
7 or 8.
You know, we're just get out there and then the team will be 5 or 6. So basically, we get 20 minutes to start practice.
That's what I was trying to get in at. You're counting the dynamic stretch, you're like 20, 25 minutes.
Yeah. And we just feel stick work is just, you can't do anything if you can't catch a throw. So the more we get, we kind of, you know, heart, you know, you kind of work your way up. So,
Coach, you're such a young guy, but you're a real traditionalist, aren't you?
Yeah, I'm just trying to not turn the ball over. So, you know, and again, you're kind of, the first thing is stationary. So you're literally partner passing, you know, you go to camp and what's one of the first things you do? All right, partner up and have a catch. Well, now our guys got to be disciplined. You got to throw the ball hard. You know, that's one thing that, one of the things that I took from Andy is he would say, oh, throw the ball hard. You know, when you get the ball, I probably yell it 15 times in practice, certainly in the beginning of the fall when the freshmen come in, everything's a lot past. You watch Denver play and you watch all these teams that are cows and you watch those guys. I mean, man, that ball moves from side to side quick. And if you do it in practice, you'll do it in the game. So it's such an emphasis for us in everything we do to just throw the ball hard. Take the arc off the ball, throw the ball hard, and listen, it's going to make your teammate better. If your teammate can't catch it, well, he's got to figure it out. He's got to get on the wall. He's got to get out there. He's got to learn to catch up to the speed of the game. So there, here's a time where you're literally standing 10 yards apart, throwing the ball, and you're putting some nice pace on that, and you're getting used to throwing the ball hard. And then we move up to moving. You know, you're in a small group with your offense, but you're moving. You know, we're trying to pick up, you know, ramp up the intensity of practice, ramp up the speed of practice, and we're doing stick work within our position groups, but we're always moving, and then we move to the team stuff.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting, man. you know, doing this for 7 years, you know, I think traditionally 90% of the guys that we interviewed were, and I say it with all the love and respect in the world, you know, kind of a Masera model, if you will. And now we're fundamentals, whatever that means. Stick work, skeleton work, spoke drills, you know, the gamut. And then like 66, and then, or a little bit of transition, not much, then 66, and then 10v10, and then about 3 or 4 years into the project, you know, we started to see more 4v4 work as opposed to 66 work. Again, just breaking down that parts of the whole, if you will. And then about 5 years, the last 4 years or so, 3 or 4 years, you know, we've really seen the coaches split the philosophies, if you will. A lot of guys just coming out, maybe doing a stick work drill to get a little bit loose, maybe a dynamic stretch, but then immediately, you know, some guys are 2v1 even, coach, 3v2s, 4v3s, to set the pace and the tone of practice right from the get-go. On a timeline, maybe literally 12, 14 minutes in, they're in a fast-paced transition drill, just trying to set the pace of what the practice is going to be. And we saw that manifest itself in like a bunch of different ways, you know. Usually they were done in the half field or in the box, or it may have been like what we call JB Clark stuff, the crunch drills here, you know, in the girls' arc or in a confined area, whatever it turns out to be. I think we've got like 15 of them on the site. But what's really funny is in the last year, I've seen guys, and I'm not patronizing you, man. I mean, we just met. Go back to a model similar to yours. I was really, really taken maybe 2 or 3 months ago. You know, I think I had my third or fourth interview with Danowski, and he was starting his practice very, very similar to you. I mean, they were, you know, 7 yards apart, and you know, some coaches use the phraseology flat hard passes, you know, and then stepping back and doing this to, you know, Ricky Soul starts his practices that way. Kind of interesting, you know, the different philosophies, in the coaches coming back. You know, we were talking about Lars, you know, he builds a very slow crescendo for the first 30 or 40 minutes in practice. And then you had guys like Matty Kerwick, you know, I mean, he's coming out in a bruiser drill, getting guys wailing on each other and getting things going right from the beginning, you know, by design. Really kind of interesting. So after we've done the full field team stuff, now where are we going, Coach?
So, you know, these are pretty traditional for all 5 days of the week. Now, as we, you know, you always got to think about your season. As I said, kind of as I transitioned from Merrimack to Yale to BU, you know, you're doing this full time, and your athletes are basically, it's a full time gig when you get to the Division I level. You're lifting, you're getting some little downtime. The guys are down right after the season, probably for 2 or 3 weeks, but you're always thinking like, all right, how can I max myself in late April and May? So you're, you know, everything is, you know, from how long you practice to what drills you do to the intensity of the drills, it's, you know, always in our thought process, but these are staples. So, you know, pretty much every single practice is going to look like this, these first five drills. Or kind of the fundamentals of our practice and, you know, something, the foundation of our practice. So the next thing we'll go to is similar to what you said, is some type of competition drill. We want to get practice going, whether it's a red versus white, doing it for points and getting guys, you know, thinking about competing, or we'll go offense versus defense, which is, you know, the you got to design the drill that makes sense. Where you're competing, and then we talked about all the drills that you talked about, where you know the crunch drills. Where, you know, we do a drill called rapid fire, where three balls are coming every. You can do it 5-on-3. You can do it 6-on-4. You can do it 6-on-5. Where, you know, you're throwing three balls in immediately. So the first ball comes in, everybody runs in, and the most common one to do is a 6-on-4. So offense comes in, and you have one line up top, and then, you know, one line behind, and then two in the alleys, and the defense has two in the alleys, and they run in, and it's a 6-on-4. And then, you know, as soon as that ball is shot or saved, another ball is coming in. So you're really playing defense, and it's kind of simulating like a rebound where the ball shot, and all of a sudden you got to find the next ball and you got to play and you got to match up. And you're already at a disadvantage as a defense. So now the shot goes off. You have to cover up inside, play inside out, and then another ball's coming in. So we call that rapid fire. We do three balls, and it's a competition, typically 6-on-4, in a half field setting. And we have, four or five other drills like that where, you talk about 3-on-2.
Let me ask you a question. Do you start that with a ground ball like you would throw in for a scramble, or is an assistant coach banging the ball to one of the offensive players anywhere?
Assistant coach is banging a ball to one of the offensive players, and everybody runs in. So you kind of get your formation, whether you want a one behind or you want a 3-3 with somebody inside. So the first one takes time to get set up. Everybody's got to get in. And then after that ball is either turned over, shot, scored, or whatever, now another coach, and we go, they know where the ball's coming from. The ball, it's not as if it's a secret, but they have to locate that coach and like I said, cover up inside because the coach has, now the coaches are at outside the box, so it's not as if they're 10 yards away and they can, so the pass takes a little bit longer to get there, but you really got to cover up inside, find the ball, cover up inside, and then work your way out and get matched up in a, unsettled situation. But that's been a good drill for us.
Coach, what's the reason for the 6v4 versus 5v3 or 6v5 or something else in that drill?
We just feel in these unsettled situations, we have other drills, scramble drills, where, it'll be more of a prolonged three, maybe.
Oh, no. I get it. And I'm not questioning you by any way, shape, or form. I'm just saying,
we
don't hear a lot of 6v4. And I mean, obviously you're encouraging a lot of great ball movement, knowing that
you're encouraged
on the field. It's a passing to a shot drill.
When the ball comes loose, typically, it's one guy's got to pick it up. So you're typically not going to have six guys open. You never would, but it's making it a little bit harder on the defense. And where the ball, we kind of thought that this is where the guys are positioned when a loose ball happens. Typically that's kind of where they're at. So again, it's quick recognition of guys being open. And then if you don't, the defense does a good job, exactly what you alluded to. It's the perfect number where if the defense plays it right, the offense is going to have to make four or five passes. And then you're doing man down concepts. You're doing hedge concepts. So, and it's early in practice where we're really concentrating on stick work. So it's a good number that
I love
it's
it,
not going to, if you do a 2-on-1 or a 3-on-2, if the offense plays it right within one pass, they should get a really good look. So, pretty early in practice, we're getting good stick work and we're working on our footwork, and drawing a guy and moving it. And certainly some of the fundamentals, shooting the ball and getting a good shot because we make the scoring system, offense should score here. So if they don't score, it's a point for the defense. So they have to really work for a good shot, so that they can score or get a high opportunity shot.
How long do they're in there for three balls, but how long does each individual rep last, Coach? Or, are they pretty good at bang, bang, bang shot,
seconds.
Or do you have to say, okay?
Yeah. Everybody wants to score. So they're looking to, get it to the open guy and get the ball inside. And I would say 10 seconds at most.
Okay.
And everybody jazzed up. It's a high energy drill and offense and defense are kind of, chirping each other and, it's one of the drills that kind of gets us energized for practice and they want to go. And, every now and again, we'll let the defense play offense just to, change it up and, let those guys throw. The goalies don't like that very much, but, you get a chance for those guys to swing it around and, draw two and move it draw one and move it. So it's good for their stick work too.
Man, I love it. I love it. So now we got the pace of practice going a little bit. We got the blood going.
Yep.
We've got, some guys banging the ball. We got some shots on cage. Where do we go next, Coach?
We always do clearing and riding. We'll do a part whole clearing drill. Like I said, we've increased our I'm really proud of this. We've increased our clearing percentage every single year. And we had a huge jump this year. We went from, we've been a bottom five clearing team. We got to the middle of the pack this year. So we were happy, love to be in the top 10, but we went from 80% to 86%.
Yeah, I'm looking at it here, 861.
Yeah. So that was good for us. So we're always going to do a part hole clearing drill. We'll break down, one of our favorite drills is we call it 15 second clear. Or we'll go full field. we'll put our shot clock on the field, and we're going to give the offense, we work on two things here, a late shot clock offense, so you have 15 seconds to get a shot, and if it goes in, then we just play it. Defense has got to play, you know, good defense, and the guys are looking for shots to the gut. And then they have 15 seconds to clear it. You got to clear the ball and get it over the restraining line. It can be in the alley. You don't have to get in the box, but they have to get it past the restraining line in the alley or in the opposite box within 15 seconds. And I think that's really helped us get out. I mean, if we've never scouted it, but we certainly know that, you know, in past years, almost every one of our clears was a settled clear. And if we could get to four or five a game that are free clears, you watch the best, you know, you watch Loyola and you watch these teams that are clearing 90%, you know, every game or every quarter, they get one or two that are free. Their goalie makes a clean save and he throws it to either a defenseman who walks it out, or he throws it to a D middie who just, you know, walks it out or runs past one attackman. And those are the clears that you don't have to work at. And then you got to get better at your settle clearing. So the ones that you don't get out, but if you can get five or, you know, between five and eight free ones a game, you know, that's going to help your clearing percentage incredibly. So we said, all right, what can we do to
I
really
always thought that was kind of a goalie mindset.
It is, but it's also a D middie. It's also a defenseman. So let's say the goalie doesn't get it out. You know, if you throw it to one of your, you know, low guys, you know, depending if you're two across or three across your defenseman, if he's just thinking, hey, I got the ball, let us substitute, let us get our offensive middies on the field, let us get to our settle clear, you know, now you're 7-8 seconds in, and you know, look, you still should clear the ball. But if he has that mindset of, I got the ball, even though I didn't get out initially, my goalie didn't get it to a long stick middie, or I didn't get to one of my D middies, and we're not out immediately, if he gets the ball and he gets his head up, and he's thinking, all right, hey, can I press this and maybe run by an attackman and make an easy pass, and now we're out, or if I can find, you know, a D middie myself or a long stick middie as the other team substituting, you know, it really helps you. And that was the next progression. It forced our goalie to throw those balls because on some of the balls that he held, he should have thrown. And it just, he's kind of feeling out which ones are good balls, which ones are bad balls. And then it really, if the goalie makes a save and we don't get out initially, guess what? We're throwing one pass. And if that defenseman doesn't get us out, we only have maybe one or two more passes if he throws an overpass to make that 15 seconds. So it just puts pressure on those guys to, all right, I got to take a risk here. That window is open, and it's, you know, I don't want to throw it, but I'm good enough to throw it. And if I make this pass, it's going to be an easy clear. Well, guess what? They got to throw it, and they got to practice it. So we'll do that.
Let me ask you a couple questions here. Yeah, number one, I think the thought process is just now permeating into the better high school coaches, understanding that even if they wanted to sub out and build the clear, where you see guys bring a pole off at the high school level and another midi in to clear the ball, you know, all those kind of things, the ramifications are that you've allowed the opposite team to, you know, make those same changes too. You know,
sure.
And if you clear the ball rapidly, a lot of times we can catch those omitties down on the defensive end if we go big little or we get a nice look. Or, I mean, I think the college coaches have, I don't want to say adopted a mindset, but a priority, if you will, that if we can clear the ball fast and keep their omitties off and not let them sub, that's where we want to be ideally. And I think that is starting to drift down into the high school level as well. And, you know, for me personally, I mean, I've been a run and gun guy since the very get-go, you know, so yeah, not an issue for me or once we can establish a culture on the teams that I'm involved with. But here's my question. In this drill, let's say that the attack does a nice job and they turn that pole back and he redirects it and then he bangs it over to the goalie. Now we're into the scenario you described where we're 8 or 9 seconds into our 15 seconds to clear. If they don't clear it in 15 seconds to the box, what happens to the drill?
With
do you stop the drill and give it back to the offense? Do you let them play
then
it out?
We go the other way. So we're doing two sides. So the red team is clearing it one way and the white team is riding. And then if we don't clear it, we'll blow the whistle. We'll get defensive personnel out on the opposite teams and then clear it the other way. So it is really a fast-paced drill. And we're also, you know, switching it. Remember, the drill starts with the offense trying to get a high percentage look within 15 seconds of the shot clock. You know, we're at the end of our
Brilliant, man. Where did you get that idea?
Just talking about, you know, like, we're not a very good clearing team, so you sit around the office and you come up with ideas.
Coach, and I've been doing this 45 years, man. You know, we start our clears with a skeleton dummy shot to the goalie, and then we get into our ride or our clear. We're missing an incredible opportunity to practice, you know, getting it off. Now, at the high school level, you know, it may not be a shot clock, but it could very, very well be a game where we're down by one or a game where we're down by two. You know, and we got to go. We got to go. Yeah. Yeah. I love that idea. So when the ball goes, let's say they don't clear it in the 15-second time frame. We immediately blow the whistle. The other team is into their 15-second offense before they clear it back out on the second side of the field, if you will.
Yeah, we'll give a second to substitute. And I think you're very astute, Mike, in what kind of art.
You just got invited back next week, man. I have not been called very astute in the 7 years I've been doing this. Very astute. Can I write that quote down? I'm putting that in a newsletter, man. Very astute.
For sure.
If I knew what astute meant, I might be even prouder.
Yeah, it's a good thing. You've probably been called worse. So, but you're exactly right. As you say, the first thought is, hey, let's get out before they can get settled, and that's going to help our clearing percentage. And the next one is, let's keep their offensive personnel on the field. If you can get out that quickly, it's really hard for teams to substitute. And if they do substitute and you get out that quickly, you're going to have numbers. So that's another thought. If we can get out that quickly, you know, we call it our sub offense. You know, we're going to have an opportunity to run, as you mentioned, some pick and roll games and we call it a zip. We want a guy off the field. We try to get a 6-on-5 and,
right.
You know, you can do different things with, you know, your defense, especially if you have some athletic team middies that can handle the ball. You can do some things out there. So it's twofold. It's clearing the ball, helping your clearing percentage. And then it's also, you know, setting up your offense where other teams can't get their entire defensive personnel out on the field like so many coaches like to do.
Oh, man, I'm digging that. See, this made me feel foolish, man. I mean, what a great idea to integrate that into your clearing game. Oh, good stuff.
So we'll do that once a week. Yeah, we'll do that once a week. And then we got some other ideas that we'll do short field clear. We'll do only 3/4 of the field. We'll get just reps on making the passes that are in our clear. Then we'll shrink the field. We'll call it tight clearing, where we'll move it in 10 yards, and we use the wing line, the face-off wing lines as our sidelines. So the passes are a little bit tighter, and everything's just condensed to make those looks. So that we'll use one of those three. We have one more drill that we'll use as kind of a lead into now a regular clear. Then we'll do kind of what you described as we're in there, we'll do that dummy shot, and then we'll get to our ride and clear. And a lot of times we'll practice what we're going to see that week from our opponent, right. Whether it's a 1-down, 2-down, 10-man, whatever. And then the white team, who's our scout team, will clear in what we're going to see. So it's like, all right, let's work on ourselves. Let's work on the primary things that we do that will help us clear. And then we move on to a little bit more of, a full field. And the field feels huge. You know what I mean? You do tight clearing, and then all of a sudden you give yourself 20 extra yards, you know, the lanes really open up and the guys do well there.
Yeah, I love it.
So that's kind of like a go ahead.
What is that, Coach? Are you doing 10 to 12 minutes of clearing every day?
We do.
In the
do
variation
15.
Of drills or more?
We do 15.
I was going to say, sounds like more. Yeah.
Yeah. We'll do 7 or 8 minutes of like the small drill. Where we're working on, you know, either getting out quick or tight clearing or through 3/4 field clearing. And then we'll do 5 or 6 minutes of, you know, live clearing. You know, we call it clear versus ride, where we're just lobbing it into the goal. We get everybody. I think an important fact too is we get everything. We're pretty meticulous about this. We get everybody within 15 yards of the cage. You know, and this was Coach Toomey, who's on my staff, it was a detail oriented guys. It's like, we got to get guys are all over the place, and guys, we got to get everybody within 15 yards to make this as realistic as we can. So, you know, that's something we'll always get inside 15. So when the lob's there, you know, the offense doesn't get out necessarily quick and guys aren't all over the place. It's kind of like a clear, you know, a little bit more game-like look as we try to route and clear. So, it's been important. You can't, I wish we didn't have, not that I don't wish. Sometimes I practice real estate really tight, as you're trying to get through your season and you don't want to be sitting there for 2 hours every single day. So, sometimes I wish we could get away from it, but it's been such a foundation. I felt this was one of the reasons we were better. We cut our turnovers down and we're a better clearing team. So we just gave ourselves more possessions. We got away with it the first 3 years because we were plus, 63-65% faceoff team. So this year was really critical when we were, plus 52 facing off. We just needed those extra possessions.
Well, and the guys are still getting touches and they're still moving.
Yeah, I know. Absolutely. So now it goes, this is where, I talked about where we are in the week, Monday. So Monday's usually a recovery day. So we're going to go.
Cause what are we now, Coach? We're an hour in, right? We've got to be at least an hour into practice, maybe a little longer.
If you include stretch, we are probably, I'm doing it right now. We're about 55 minutes in.
Okay.
Yeah. And now this is where practice is going to be different, right, depending on the day. If Monday is a medium day for us, Tuesday and Thursdays are hard days for us. We go, we get after it. And then Wednesday, we're really going to cut back. We're not going to do full field stuff. We're going to do a lot of six-on-six stuff. We're going to do as much teaching as we can. And then Fridays, obviously, really, really light as we prep for, as we try to just keep our legs for Saturday. So if we're on our hard days, we're going to do some type of transition drill. We're going to work on either a primary break, and we basically have three areas, from our transition. We're always going to look for a primary transition. That means anytime that we have,
if you're not covered, get covered. Never let the ball get ahead of the guy.
There you go. We're going to do some of those.
What's number three? What's number three? These are the Andy Shea golden rules of transition. If you're not covered, get covered. Never let the ball get ahead of you. And then there's a third one. I can't remember what it is.
Make the easy play. Something like that. Is that it?
I don't know, man, but it's an interesting phraseology. I use it a lot early in the year with our teams because, you'd be running a 1v1 ground ball to transition, and the guy, let's say, or whatever it is, a guy gets a ground ball behind the cage, he's immediately banging it, because we focus so much on ground ball fast, which makes me a loudmouth, hypocritical coach, actually. But when you sense we have numbers, okay. That was one of the things that Andy used to always tell me. If you're not covered, get covered. And different players learn differently, I used to tell guys, okay, we have three, they have two. Who's the open guy if there's nobody on you? Oh, it's me. Yeah, so, if you're the open guy, go to the cage. Some guys learn with different phraseology, but it's really funny, man. I think 52 guys that played for me that are now coaching across the United States. And every once in a while I'll get the email going, I told my team, if you're not covered, get covered. And everybody looked at me like I was Chinese. Because the first time you hear it, it doesn't seem like it makes sense,
Right. You're always trying to get uncovered. Yeah, I know.
So fun.
So we'll do some type of transition drill. It will either be focused on primary transition. It will be our secondary transition where we're getting the ball through X. And we're kind of just going to get into our 6-on-6 offense. We call it probing. We get it to our guy at X, and as guys are subbing, or we had a pretty dynamic kid in Cal Durst this year, just get him the ball and kind of let him play even though we were numbered up. But we called that secondary transition. And if we didn't have them, then we had our sub game. So we're going to work on one of those three aspects primarily. We're going to have a drill that is, all right, this is going to be all primary transition, so it's all going to be 4-on-3, 54, 65, and we have a myriad of those drills. And then we go, okay, now we're matched up. All right, well, let's see if we can't probe. And if the defense does a good job, that's okay. We're just going to go into our 6-on-6. And then we have our subbing period where what we call, put from the language from Yale GOATs, where we set a pick, with a defensive personnel and run up one of our offensive guys off and then substitute him, run him to the midfield. Or we have what we call our zip offense, where a guy is kind of playing a little cat and mouse, and then he sprints to the midfield, and we try to get, you know, a 4 or 5 yard advantage and look for that 65. So working on those things. So depending if we're on a full field transition day, you know, we're going to go right into, you know, probably spend 10 to 12 minutes on one of those drills. And then, you know, we're going to turn our attention to, you know, again, we're going to go back to the par hole after we get through that. Now we're working on the individual. We'll typically do 10 minutes of positional work where defense coordinator has all the poles. I typically take the attackman, face-off guy takes the face-off guys. My offense coordinator takes the middies. And we're working on whatever, we think that week we need to work on.
Games are on your slips and stuff like that.
Your two-man, your shooting, our sneak from, when we're sneaking from behind, you know, that's been a big thing that we took advantage of this year when teams try to really hard hedge off that corner, working on our attack and coming around, we call it a frogger. Guys come around the cage, catch and finish, you know, a lot of times we'll do tennis balls in the goalies. So, and defense is doing footwork, they're doing ground balls, they're doing approaches, you know, they're doing, you know, all the stuff that, you know, that they need to be successful individuals. And then the harder practices will go to, or the longer practices will do, you know, one-on-ones to two-on-twos. You know, once that Coach Toomey did this, like you said, you're talking to people for 40 years, you never heard something like the 15-second clear. I've been doing this a long time and never thought of this. We do a one-on-one to a two-on-two. So the first guy will go one-on-one, and then that he'll stay in the drill, and then he'll come set a pick or play two-man game, do a flyby, it goes from a one-on-one to two-on-two. So, you know, just something small that I never thought of that Coach Toomey brought to our practices. So we'll do one-on-ones to two-on-twos.
You know what? We had a great drill years ago, when Goldberg was still at St. Andrews. Built that into a 4v4. And it was, you can do it as a diamond, you can do a corner, whatever you want. I mean, put them in where you want them in your formations, or, you know, maybe, you know, for me, you know, I love to invert. So, you know, we'll have a day where the middies have to play behind and on the wings and the attack plays up top. Which is another interesting thing about this year's NCAA lacrosse, isn't it? I mean, when did all these attackmen start playing up near the restraining line this year? I mean, I've never seen it like I did this year. But anyway, the first one is a 1v1. The 2v1, the next line, whether it's a diamond or whatever, carries. It's a 2v2. Yeah. The first 1v1 offensive guy has to set a pick, so it's an on-ball pick. Then immediately goes to the third guy. It's got to be an off-ball pick.
Gotcha.
And then when it goes to the fourth, these go rapid fire, right? I mean, they're going right to the cage.
Yep.
The fourth one is one pick on, one pick off.
Gotcha.
Oh, you don't seem too impressed, man. I thought I was going to give you a great revelation
don't
seem too impressed, you know. God.
I think any time that you're incorporating on ball.
You know, it wasn't that long ago I was astute. I mean, literally 20 minutes ago I was astute. Now I'm like a schmuck.
Nah, man, it's all good. It's all, what is two-man game? It's all fundamental. What do you see a ton? What is all these guys doing now? Two-man games, all the best teams in our league are getting big, big picks and just getting that little hedge. It's all simple. You know, it all comes back. So, yeah, Goldberg's a good one, man. So, yeah, on ball, off ball. All good stuff, Coach.
Hey, listen. God, I just looked at the clock. We've been doing this an hour already. It goes fast.
Yeah,
I have to tell the listeners, we had like a pre-call, you know, where I met Coach because I didn't know him. And he was kind of worried about what we were going to talk about. You still worried about it?
I'm not worried about it. Yeah, just talk and laugh.
Yeah, I was telling him, you know, we used to have coaches send me a list of questions, you know. And we never got to the second question, you know. But, you got to come back, man. You got to come back. Hey, listen, I want to promote these. I think that when people listen to you, they're going to say, this guy's got some really unique ideas. I mean, I have not talked to anybody that was really focusing on their shooting drills an hour and 35, hour and 40 minutes into practice, which I think is great for a myriad of reasons. But anyway, before we wrap it up, let's talk about these camps. Coach, am I right? This stuff is tied into aroundthecrease.com. Is that correct?
No, that's the women's.
Oh, that's
ours is terrierlax.com.
Okay.
If you go to terrierlax.com, we are our main camps are these prospect days. We find those extremely valuable. You know, not only is it a small group and every kid is going to get evaluated, it's typically between 60 and 80 kids. You know, sometimes we have 45 kids. It's a one-day event, and we're going to run through a practice. You know, we're going to show you exactly what it's like. We call them BU experiences. You're going to find out
exactly what
it's like.
Is that like a prospect day, coach, or is that?
Yeah, that's exactly what it's. It's a prospect day. We're going to teach, though. I mean, we're going to run through a practice.
No, I didn't. Yeah, I was out of line there. I didn't mean it the way it sounds.
No, I know what you mean. But it's not going to be stations. You know what I mean? It's not going to be, you know, you're not going there. It's not a your old school three-day camp where you're going. It's a one-day prospect day where you're certainly evaluation is a huge component of it. But it's also you're going to get coached by our staff. You know, we always make it. The summer's hard, man. Recruiting is, you know, it's our lifeline. And we always make it a point to have three coaches there. You're never going to go there, and I'm going to be there every time. So it's important to us that these are, you know, kids feel that they're getting a value. At the very least, even if we're not going to recruit them, they're going to see a city campus. They're going to hear me speak about our recruiting process. They can ask literally any question that they want, and I'll answer it as honestly as I can. We're going to practice for about 2 hours. We're going to take some lunch. We're going to do some drills that we think can evaluate, you know, what type of an individual player you are.
Hey, how's the food up there at Boston University, man?
It's unbelievable. It's unbelievable. Some of the best. The cafeteria is lobster night's a thing, man. Lobster night in the fall. All you can eat lobster one night, so you got to make sure you're around for that night.
I get these kids that play for me, and they go to these prospect camps, and I say, how'd it go? Oh, man, the food was unbelievable.
Yeah.
I'm going, well, what do you think of Coach such and such? Yeah, he was good.
What?
But the food was unbelievable. Okay. In the minds of a 17-year-old, right?
There you go. And that and the girls, right? If they saw a pretty girl, they're going there. So
I'm looking at these June, July.
Yeah, we tried to do
one in June, two in July. We'll get the link up on the website. You'll get
that'll be
hopefully
awesome.
Some hits.
I would say, you know, honestly, and again, you run this, the perception that, you know, it's, you're not going to get evaluated or it's not, you know, I would say half the guys on our roster went to one of our prospect days. It's just the truest way to get seen. It's just, if you're interested in BU or you're interested in, you know, you said Richmond, you're interested in Yale, go to their camp. I mean, there's no other way that a coach is, you're going to be, you know, there's usually 60 teams when we go to a tournament. Guess what? There's 60 players when you come to our campus. And it's just, you know,
believe it or not, for a guy that coached, you know, I think I did 5 years with the Copperhead Nationals, the Dick National Championship. We won in Ontario. We won in Denver. We won in Calgary. Had great players. Coaching was suspect, man. but yeah, I mean, the people that hired me were, dismayed, you know, parents would come to me and parents that had realistic financial, you know, constraints, you know,
sure.
Hey man, he can't play for you and he wants to go to the BU prospect camp. I would always tell him, go to the prospect camp.
Yep.
Because until you're on campus and you get a feel for that campus and get a feel for the staff, you know, because there's just so much natural attrition, isn't there? I mean, you know, schools recruit ten guys, and two of them go because they miss their or leave because they miss their girlfriend, or it's 9 hours away, or it's not far enough away.
Yeah.
You got to go feel that and flavor it. I think it's a lot more important than travel ball once you get to a level where you're capable of playing D1 lacrosse.
Yeah, I think so too. And you got we say this, and we don't try to scare people. D1 lacrosse is a grind. It's not for everyone. And people have, and I think the club world and the kids starting so early makes it even more challenging for these kids because they're burnt out. Sometimes they're burnt out from the college. So it's hard. Like we're all just trying to, again, and as I tried to, you know, stress when we're building our practices, we're trying to make sure we're at our best in April and May. So every drill that we do is like, all right, is this too hard? Is this practice too hard? And are we doing too much? Because we, in top of all the lacrosse we're doing, we have strength and conditioning. and we're at a world-class institution. That is not easy. So it's really important for us that guys understand it, they're committed to it, and they know what they're getting into. So I, on a recruiting trip, you know, if a guy's coming for a visit, if I get a sense that a kid is like, it sounds great and I love lacrosse, if I get any sense that he is, you know, wavering on the commitment or just isn't sure about it, I hammer it. I can't say it enough to the parents. And just, this is a lot. And just so they hear it, you know, and that's really important.
Because
it's important to
so many
us because
college
we don't
coaches.
Want guys attrition.
I'm sorry. Go ahead, coach.
Yeah, we just don't want guys. We want guys to know what it is and they want to love it. You've got to love. If you're playing, God, we're with these guys so much and they put so much into it. And that's why I have so much respect for these guys and at any level. I don't care if you're on RPI team 71. You're working your tail off and you are committing to something incredible, and everybody.
Well, and even Division
Two
and
really
Division Three to more of an extent than ever before.
Yep, yeah, because everybody wants to win, and guys are you know, there's more funding there, and just everybody's getting better. There's thank God for Division Three and Division Two expansion because there's not enough spots for Division One guys. There's so many Division One guys littered across Division Two and Division Three rosters because there's just not enough spots. There's only 71 of us, and it's you take 10 a year on average, or 10 to 12, and there's just more than, you know, 300 guys that are really, really good lacrosse players. And every year you just, oh my God, I wish that guy was Charlie Fay. Oh my God, that kid's incredible at Bates, man. He'd be first team all league and all American, and man, that boy can play. So you just, but my point is, I just, it's really important for the prospect days and during the recruiting process. That's been my thing. I learned that from Andy is you just got to be honest. You just got to, if you don't have, I mean, I'll never forget at Merrimack, this kid was like, I want to do criminal justice. And I'm like, dude, we don't have it. All right. Well, I still want to come. Well, what? You know, why would you, if that's what you do, like college is your next step. You know, it's going to be the best 4 years of your life and you're going to meet your best friends for the rest of your life, but you know, at the end of the day, you got to graduate and you got to, you know, have a career path. And some people don't know what they want to do, but if, you know, when a guy is set, this is what I want to do, or this is what, you know, this is where I think I'm going, I'm really interested, and the school doesn't have it, well, guess what, next school. So it just comes down, and I say this to the parents, don't choose a school because of me. I get the question asked all the time, will you be here when my son gets here, will you be here in 5 years? And I think so. I love BU and it's a great opportunity, but just like every single kid out there and every single family, they're going to do what's best for them. And I never resent anybody, you know, this whole poaching and this whole, you know, losing kids and we've lost kids. We have a great 2017 class and I've lost three kids in that class. I never resent them. I never say, listen, if you think that's the best opportunity for you, I might not agree with it and I'll try to talk you out of it because I think BU is a great place and here's my vision for you, and you're going to play in this spot, and you're going to be this, and you're going to be that. But if you think Naval Academy is a better opportunity for you, okay, go to Naval Academy. And that's kind of the point that I try to get across. If there's a better opportunity for my family to be closer to home or just, you know, just set my family up, then just like you, I'm going to consider it. But for now, I love BU. BU is I got a great job.
You look good in red, too, really, man.
I think it's important through the recruiting process and everything you do. Kids are smart, man. They're really, really smart. And you can't fool them. So, you know, best advice I can give to any young coach or any high school coach listening is be honest, man. Just be honest. And, you know, even if it's hard, you know, the kids will respect you for just saying, you know, the truth and you'll be better for it.
Well, you know, and I get asked to do a handful of coaching clinics around the country where, you know, they just, I do some film and then I show them what the pace really looks like when you get 200 touches in the first half hour. You know, what does it really look like? And how fast are the whistles? But anyway, you know, more and more, you know, if they've got me in their town, whether it's in Utah or Texas or Florida or wherever it is, you know, I'll offer them. If I'm going to be there, you know, if you want to get a big room at the church, you know, or an auditorium at the high school and have the parents come in and let them ask me questions for 35, 40 minutes, you know, and bring in some neighboring coaches, you know, and do a panel, you know, or let me facilitate or let me do it. But at the end of the day, you know, I always tell them the number one question I always get, about a prospect or a kid that I've coached or if he's in Atlanta and a kid I know or I've seen plays for another team, you know, the number one question is, does he really love lacrosse? Because if you don't love it, you know, and I have broken parents' hearts. I have parents that won't talk to me. I got a kid that went to Barry. I shouldn't say this on the air. I got a kid that went to Barry, set every D3, went, set every scoring record, great player, you know, but when he wanted me to stand up for him, you know, at some D1 schools, I didn't do it. And I met with him and his parents, and I said, I don't think he loves lacrosse. He really likes lacrosse. But he talks about fraternity experience and doing this and having this and doing that. That makes him a wonderful person. I mean, I love him because of who he is, not because he's a lacrosse player. What are you, crazy, you know? Yeah, but you got to love it, man. And I got to believe.
And that's a, let me just say this. And there's, I played Division II lacrosse, and I had a wonderful experience. And people just have fun. Like exactly what you said. The kid that went to Barry, I bet he had a great experience. And that's okay. That's
well,
wonderful.
Every time
thing.
He scored 5 goals, his dad sent me an email.
Yeah.
And I'm going, well, you never listened to what I had to say. Okay.
And he probably wouldn't. I wouldn't trade my Merrimack experience for anything. You know, I had.
Well, and I got kids that, you know, I used to get when I was coaching at Auburn. We got to get off the air. When I was coaching at Auburn, I used to get 3 guys, 4 guys a year, MIAA guys, that went to play D1. That just said, I don't want to do this anymore. I want to go to an SEC school and go to the fraternities and go to the football games with 130,000 and be crazy and play lacrosse in the spring for a good coach and bang the ball and have a blast. You know,
we're getting D1 lacrosse, so we could do both, right?
You know, and I would ask those guys, you know, I mean, why are you coming to Auburn? Man, mm-hmm. You know, I was studying until 2 o'clock in the morning. I had to get up and move the Caterpillar tire up and down the field, you know, at 6:30 in the morning and then lift weights and do this and do that. And I'm going, well, was that a surprise to you? No, but I didn't realize what it is.
Okay. Hey, special kid, man. Well, Mike, thanks so much, man. It was awesome being on the call. I'm looking at my. I'm sorry.
I just had a blast talking to you.
We could probably talk for another hour and 16, man. It was great. I'd love to come on again. And
hang with me 1 second here, Coach. Hey, LaxCoachMike.com. Yeah, great coach, obviously. We'll have him back. I promise you. You got incredible responsibility with influencing the lives of these young people. Take it seriously. God bless everybody.